with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
You play the game.
I mean, listen, we talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about practice.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
Touchdown. You are now locked in to the Clock Dodgers Podcast.
Welcome to the Clock Dodgers Podcast. I am your host, Neil Maligno. This is our official Scott Fishbowl episode. And today we're keeping it strictly gang gang. Josh, what's up?
Gang gang?
Gang gang.
Gang gang.
This guy cannot do an intro to save his life. Adam, what up, man?
Gang gang, bro.
Gang gang, man. It's gang gang. By gang gang, there's no guess.
I like how Josh said it with a question mark on it. Yeah. It totally threw me off. Josh is like gang gang.
He's not really. I don't know if Josh is a good representative for Oklahoma or if he's a bad representative.
I'm the best representative.
I don't know about that. I think people in Oklahoma would beg to differ. Anyway, let's move on to Scott Fishbowl. For those who are listening, I mean, I'm assuming everybody knows who it is, what it is. We've been doing these episodes for the last like 3 years, right? Something like that. But if you don't know, if you're not familiar with it, Scott Fishbowl is a league that everybody wants to be a part of. Just to show proof of that, there's over 10,000 people who sign up every year to be a part of it. Started by Scott Fish. Surprise. It's really, that sums it up. It sounds like an interesting name, but it's really actually his name. So that's pretty cool. It's a charity league. The last 10 years, it has donated to, he has Fantasy Cares, but it's a Toys for Tots is the main goal. So it's kind of a league to bring the community together. At the same time, it's through charity. So Clock Dodgers, for instance, has an Eliminator League set up by John Bosch. He also helps a lot with Scott Fishbowl stuff. These Eliminator Leagues are a lot of fun, which I must mention that this year was the first year, I believe, that he's done it this way, where you could randomly get put into leagues. Which not that I didn't like people who selected to be in Clock Dodgers is obviously awesome. And some people did select to be in Clock Dodgers specifically for this year too, but there were a bunch of people who actually didn't like select Clock Dodgers. They just said, hey, throw me in a random league. I think they're in like tons of them. And they just said, hey, throw me in a bunch of random leagues and let's see how it plays out. And it's been like this beautiful thing, man, because we're all like connecting with people we don't know now because of this, which was kind of the goal, like to start with, I think. And so it's like really cool. Like there's people who have like never listened to the podcast. They didn't know what Clock Dodgers was. Now they're listening, they're supporting what we're doing. They're like really cool people. We have great conversations back and forth. So shout out to John Bosch for those. It's really cool. And I like that he, you know, introduced that, that into the mix, that random stuff. And he, you know, John Bosch is always creating stuff. So it makes sense that he's the one that did that. But we're going to talk about Scott Fishbowl heavy on this episode. This won't be the only time we talk about Scott Fishbowl. Let's be honest. We're going to have guests on. We're going to be talking about it more and more as things get closer and throughout the season. But this is like the introduction episode that we like to do each year. So let's break down the league really quick, just the basics.
The roster requirements this year are, I believe they're the same as last year, actually, which was the one quarterback, two running back, three wide receiver, one tight end, a super flex, and three additional flexes. So with the Scott Fishbowl, they always require you to have a lot of starting roster spots. I believe, actually, if I said there were three flexes, I'm trying to remember if there's three or four. It's hard to keep track of the full number of players. But, I think there's four, right?
Yep.
So there's actually 11 total starters. So, I mean, it's deep rosters. That's kind of always been the biggest thing with the Scott Fishbowl every year is just how deep the rosters are. And then, you know, the thing that makes the Scott Fishbowl unique is that the scoring format changes each year. And, you know, Josh, you can kind of touch base on some of the big changes that were made for this year.
So the big changes this year, I think, are really all to do with quarterback. And so you have the negative half a point per incompletion. I could be wrong about that. Negative points per incompletion. And then there's also a negative per sack. And I think the big difference that is made is that quarterbacks now drop off at a rate that is similar to the other positions. And it also changed the ranking of the quarterbacks. So guys who have a very high completion rate, maybe they check down early, maybe they don't get sacked. Guys like Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins are rising way up in the rank. And at the same time, there's this drop-off that I think it creates an urgency to grab the quarterback position.
Yeah.
So just specifically,
hold on, Adam, just to make sure we know, it's -1 point per sack, -1 point per incompletion. So it's -1 for both.
Thanks.
Yep. And then it's 0.5 for every completion.
Yes.
So essentially every incompletion negates two completions. So what that really boils down to is 2/3 a ratio. So from like a completion percentage standpoint, you want quarterbacks that can complete more than 66% of their passes, because then they're going to kind of be in the green from a completion point standpoint here. Which is interesting, because looking at that, I believe there was only 8 quarterbacks that did that last year. So like Josh said, that drop-off, that can partially influence that. And I'm sure that sacks play another unique factor in that. I know for myself personally, this would be the first time I ever play in a league that had negative points for sacks. And I know it's not something that's super common out there.
For anyone who's not familiar with Scott Fishbowl, it is that is one of the big things each year. The scoring changes. To keep it fresh, another big factor is you can't make trades within the league. So therefore, waivers become very important. It's a bid-in waiver system. So that's, again, there's all kinds of these like things that just make this super interesting. Of course, no kickers or defense, because that's what real fantasy leagues do either way. Over 1,400 teams, I believe, this year. So it's like just a ton of people, 120 leagues, divisions, however you want to look at them. So there's just it's a lot of fun. There's just a whole lot of stuff goes into it. Basically, all your research that you do for your normal leagues, you apply it in some sense here, but most people create their own special rankings and special tiers and whatnot just for this league. And it's a league mix of analysts, fans, all kinds of people from all across the, fantasy landscape. And it's just a lot of fun, man. Like there's no downside to this. Like, it's just an amazing league all around. The cause is more amazing than anything else. And just playing, like I said, with new people every year, being introduced to new people. It's funny because even after, last year I was in a league with Jordan, who's over with, Ray, Destination Devi. And we didn't even know each other then. And this year we're talking like, hey, man, we didn't even realize I was in a league with you last year in Scott Fishbowl. So it's like, it's just pretty cool. Like, you just get, you get to know a bunch of new people and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. People start group chats over it, and it's just a lot of fun stuff. So we're going to talk a little more specifically, but before we go into the specific questions and players and like I said that we have here, do you guys have anything else about the Scott Fishbowl that you feel is important to mention before we get into this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the positional scoring a little bit and how it has shifted for quarterbacks this year, but some traditional things that are carrying over from last year that are still very different from your normal league is that for rushing and receiving, you're getting a 0.5 point per reception and then a 0.5 point for rushing and receiving first downs. And then those totals essentially double for tight ends. So tight ends get an additional 0.5. So it's a 0.5 point per reception and a 0.5 point for first downs for tight ends. So that always offers kind of this interesting element where a lot of people don't track first downs as much as they do receptions. So there's just a lot of in-game factors that make the Scott Fishbowl really unique.
Yeah.
It's too much to process for me. Like, I just have to look at – there was a guy, I wish I knew who he was, but he put out a historical average for just a finish, points worst, best to worst. And so you can kind of see how the positions fit in as you go down through the ranks. And to me, that has created a clearer picture than trying to think about the scoring, because there's just so much going on there.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when I first looked at the scoring, I think you and I kind of discussed a little bit some of the changes, especially to the quarterback position, like you were emphasizing. And, playing in a completion league, you immediately think, like, that's going to have this gigantic impact. What was interesting is once I actually started to math it out, if you will, the impact of having incompletions worth twice as much as completions really just made it so that whole thing kind of negates itself. I mean, even the best quarterbacks last year from like a completion percentage standpoint were not having a huge fantasy impact from a point standpoint in a scoring system like this. I'm pulling it up right now because I didn't have the completion percentage in front of me. But if I remember correctly, it was something like roughly an additional 30 points coming from the completion percentage from their completions for the player that had the best completion percentage last year. So at the end of the day, it might be like an extra 2 to 3 point per game influence. That can be huge. I mean, it really can be when it comes down to just like the nitty gritty of points. But I feel like it's going to be one of those things that gets overemphasized. And honestly, looking into it more, the sack aspect is what I think is going to be underemphasized and something that I'm more curious about. Because players like you mentioned before, in Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins, people look at them and they're like, yeah, those guys have huge completion percentages. But what's interesting is they also don't ever really get sacked, or at least didn't last year. So I think that that might be the factor that I look into the most. But I think when you have scoring like this, you just have to kind of figure out what are the most important things to focus on. Because like you said, you can't focus on everything.
Yeah, and just to point out, like Ryan over at goingfor2.com, he created a list. I shared the link somewhere. I forget where I shared it, maybe in a group chat or something. But he has a list of basically comparing 2019 PPR placement by play scoring versus the Scott Fishbowl scoring. So like how it would adjust the player. So just so listeners know, maybe either who are new to Scott Fishbowl or just haven't really dug into this kind of stuff yet, you know, on his list, he has like, let's say, and just looking at quarterbacks, you guys mentioned Derek Carr. So Derek Carr in PPR last year, or according to the scoring that he was using here, yeah, it was 15th. I believe it was 15th. He in this scoring, he's like number 8. So it pushes him up into the top 10. Someone like Drew Brees was 21st. In this, he's 6. You know what I mean? So that's just the difference just for quarterbacks alone. And you can look at Ryan's ranking stuff that he did here. It's a really good sheet to look at.
I got to say, I really feel like this style of scoring has sort of improved the taste of the quarterback in the ranking. Like, I feel like this is actually closer to who's good and who's not.
Yeah, sort of. I see what you mean, sort of, yeah.
Derek Carr is underrated. Are you really going to give me a yeah, sort of, when I'm trying to talk to you about Derek Carr?
Yeah, well, because even Neil could see that that was a nonsense argument, but sure, bud. Cool, yeah, completion percentage. That's what tells us who the good quarterbacks are.
Not just that, but it matters.
It does matter.
I mean, yeah, I think it matters just about as much as the scoring here indicates, which is that it is something that people will overfocus on and doesn't have that much of an impact.
He's above your boy Kyler, Adam. What do you say about
that's true.
What do you say about that, buddy?
Kyler was sacked a ton last year. I think sacks are going to play a huge factor.
So how can you say it doesn't matter? It does matter.
It's true.
It does matter, sir.
The low A dot, the short pass feeds not only your completion percentage, but it also prevents you from taking sacks.
Schooling them, Josh. Derek Carr, top 10, baby. Finally in my life, there's somewhere Derek Carr is top 10.
I think Derek Carr is not a bad player at all.
Adam doesn't like hearing this kind of stuff.
He's got receivers now. Watch out, bro.
He's got him.
All right, guys.
Let's get into this episode. Let's get more into this content that we have here. I don't know if Derek Carr comes up, but he might. I'll find a way to fit him in. Let's start with trust issues, our opportunity to help lower or raise the anxiety levels of our listeners. Let's see what we got here. For trust issues, the winner of the Scott Fishbowl will have a top 4 running back on their team. Trust or trust issues? Adam, you can start.
I'm going to say trust. I think that traditionally Scott Fishbowl has always kind of focused on the running back and the quarterback positions as far as from like a scoring standpoint. They always stand out. I think last year in this scoring, Christian McCaffrey was first, but Lamar was right on his tails. And I mean, Lamar definitely has that ceiling. I don't think any other quarterback has that ceiling. And if you want me to bet on one positional player versus an entire position, because I think there's plenty of running backs that could do it, I'm going to take the position every time. Lamar's great. He could do it. he's the only outlier that I see that possible with. I see that not possible with any other quarterback personally. I think that rushing is way too big of a factor in this scoring. And I think that the only player that presents that level of upside from a rushing standpoint while still being a quarterback is Lamar.
Josh.
Quarterback is becoming a position that's kind of like running back, where it really matters how you get your volume. And Lamar creates so much rushing volume that he's like, he's different in the same way that Le'Veon Bell used to be different. And like Austin Eckler is now different because their volume comes through passing, which just makes them so much more efficient.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as like the winner of Scott Fishbowl having a top four running back, like, as if it has to be like a must. I say trust issues. I don't agree with it. I mean, there's, to me, I'm going to take the field. Basically, there's too many ways to win the league, in my opinion, to like commit to that for me. So I don't think, you know, the winner has to have one of these top four running backs. It doesn't, I don't think who wins doesn't have to have Christian McCaffrey, Elliott, or one of these guys. Like, I think there's other ways to win this.
Well, I don't necessarily think that meant top four drafted. My interpretation of it was top four finishing. Are you taking it as top four drafted or as finishing top four?
I want it to be either way. Okay. Like, is it going to be you're going to find Alvin Kamara, or is it going to be like you have to pick right in the top four?
Yeah, because, I mean, for instance, just for statement's sake, the top four in this scoring from last season would have been McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, and Aaron Jones. All four of those guys, you're not getting like a huge ADP value on. But, you know, McCaffrey was the only one of them being drafted in the top four. So I think that there's a little bit of a distinction there as far as having one of those players that is actually a top four running back at the end of the year. I think that when you're playing in these huge tournament style, you know, leagues where we're competing against, you know, 1,400 other people, it's really hard to envision someone getting all the way to the final and then winning the final and not having one of those core assets. I think Neil's right in the sense that, like, it's not impossible, but I think personally I would want to be trying to identify who I think those elite running backs could be and really trying to target them, because I think that the value there is so much greater than just trying to pick other pieces.
So let me just say this before we move on to like the next question here. And I know we'll get more into what we would do at different spots in the draft, but so are you saying that if you're in the back, you know, back of the first round, 10, 11, 12, you're going to go running back? You would go running back just because of the fact that you think a running back, it's going to lead you to the championship here?
I mean, I think it really depends on what's available, but based on the way this scoring is set up, there's only barely a handful of wide receivers and tight ends that I think are worth drafting in the first two rounds. Mm-hmm. So more likely than not, yeah, it's going to be a running back or quarterback.
Okay. I hear you. Josh, anything else on this before we move on?
No, just good stuff there. I agree with what you guys are talking about.
All right. All right, the next one we got here is the quarterback one will be drafted in the first round. Trust or trust issues on that? Josh, you want to start that one?
I do not trust it. I do not trust it. And I do not trust it because I saw in some of my own leagues, you know, across different formats, Patrick Mahomes finished as the QB8. And I just think that the mechanics of this position are such that the QB1 could easily come outside of the first round. Like, if the question is first round only or everybody else, I'm betting on everybody else. Somebody yeah. else is going to do it. And Dak Prescott is probably my front runner. You're not getting a huge discount there. He might even go in the first round.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if we just look at, you know, the mock drafts that have occurred so far for the Scott Fishbowl, personally, I don't think they're that reliable. That being said, I think they're kind of the best thing we have to go off of at this point. Based on those three quarterbacks are going in the first round right now, I mean, obviously Lamar and Mahomes, but Dak is still falling into the end of the first. Personally, I think that's more likely a better shot. I'm going to guess in most drafts you're going to see four or five, potentially even upwards of six going in the first round, because from what I've seen in the past, almost every year in Scott Fishbowl, I feel like the mock drafts are less QB heavy than the actual drafts are. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. But I feel like even if you take this down to, you know, QB four and include Prescott and Watson as far as first round quarterbacks go, I'm still with Josh. I mean, I still want to take the field, which feels a little crazy when you have, you know, the QB one from last year and the QB one from 2 years ago in that top four. But this scoring definitely changes things a little bit. And, you know, Josh was saying Patrick Mahomes wasn't a top quarterback, and in some leagues he was as low as eight. If you look at this scoring last year, he was QB four. But what's interesting is that he was behind Drew Brees of all quarterbacks. And I think that that's kind of interesting in this particular scoring. And right behind him was Ryan Tannehill. So it's one of these things where I think that there's too many opportunities for other quarterbacks to emerge. And I think it's going to be much closer, with the exception of somebody like a Lamar Jackson, who has that insane rushing upside.
Yeah. And are you, when you're saying the rankings right now, are you looking at last year's scoring or this year's scoring?
So I'm looking at what happened last year based on Scott Fishbowl scoring from this year. So
okay, gotcha.
Scott Fishbowl 10 scoring. Sorry, specifically that was actually points per game. I didn't realize that I was looking at points per game instead of full season, because obviously Ryan Tannehill didn't play the full season.
Right.
So from a points per game standpoint, though, Drew Brees was the second overall quarterback and Ryan Tannehill was the QB5. Those are two quarterbacks that right now are not being drafted that highly and are not one of these first round guys. So I think there's going to be guys that you can get later who are still going to be super valuable.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you both. All right. Last trust issue that we have here is Joe Mixon belongs in the first round of the Scott Fishbowl. Trust or trust issues?
I think he belongs there because of, like Adam has been talking about, the prioritization of the running back position as a whole. But I think he's a turn pick. And it kind of depends on how you feel about Dalvin and his potential holdout. But I think Joe Mixon belongs in the conversation.
Yeah, for me, it's a hard trust issues. I pick at the back of the first, and I would not draft Joe Mixon.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't go Joe Mixon. But again, this is one of those things where it's like, if you love Joe Mixon or you're a big believer in Joe Mixon, or you absolutely want a running back because there's some people who just refuse to leave the first without a running back, then I get it. You know what I mean? Like, that's a guy that people see rising. They feel super strong and confident in his workload and everything. But it wouldn't be where I would go, just because it's not my strategy in Scott Fishbowl to play that route. But I definitely understand, you know, if someone does it. I'm kind of curious, Adam, I'm assuming you're all fine with that as far as Joe Mixon in the first?
Oh, yeah. To me, I'm so far away from that, it's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
I am not on the bandwagon of the running back on a rookie quarterback's offense. Like, that to me is just a bad recipe. They were the worst team in the NFL last year. Just because Joe Burrow comes there doesn't mean they're going to make this huge rebound. I feel like I personally made the mistake of getting overly excited about what a talented rookie quarterback can do for your franchise that's struggling in watching the Cardinals last year.
Yeah.
So I'm really pulling back the reins and tempering expectations on the Bengals offense. I think drafting Mixon highly is super foolish, personally. I really do. I think that they're not going to be in a position to score often enough to really put him in a position to score touchdowns, which at the end of the day, no matter what fantasy format you play, touchdowns are always worth the most. They always have the most impact. So for me, I mean, just looking at how he did last year, and if you're just looking at the Scott Fishbowl 10 scoring, he was overall 29th in scoring last year. So it's just, it doesn't do anything for me. I think that there's a lot of guys who are going to be drafted around him that I would just rather have. Like, I'd take my chances with Derrick Henry over him personally. I mean, I'm probably drafting Miles Sanders over him, Nick Chubb over him, Josh Jacobs. Like, for me, Joe Mixon's like around Kenyon Drake. And honestly, Kenyon Drake, I feel like, has just as much opportunity in a better offense. So that, for me, it's a positional thing.
I like those takes, Adam. I got like fanning myself.
Yeah, I'm really down on Joe Mixon. I mean, I don't think I'm going to own him pretty much anywhere.
I'm with you, Adam, as far as I would take Drake over Mixon.
You are one Joe Burrow handshake away from Joe Mixon 101. All are.
I'm with you, Adam. Drake over Mixon, baby.
I don't hate that take. I don't hate that take, and that's like three rounds of value.
I would do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Kenyon Drake's probably going to be firmly in the third round in the Scott Fish Bowl. He might even sneak into some second rounds of the Scott Fish Bowl, again, just based upon the scoring and how it's going to emphasize running backs. That being said, I don't see how you draft someone like Joe Mixon when the other players that are going there are on offenses that are going to be in the playoffs. Like, they're efficient offenses. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're looking at the Tennessee Titans, when you're looking at offenses like the Philadelphia Eagles, like, these are talented offenses. I'm not going to, you know, pick the running back on a team that I don't know if they're going to get four wins this year.
Dude, it's a good take. Like, so tell me, how good do you think the Cardinals are going to be?
I mean, that's the thing for me. I honestly don't even know if the Cardinals are going to be an 8-win team this year. That being said, we know from what their offense did last year that they're going to be efficient on offense. They're going to struggle on defense. That's the trouble with that team. For me, I mean, again, Kenyon Drake, to me, is where Joe Mixon should be. It's not really like a knock or a plus on either player. It's just that, like, I think they're being misevaluated by the masses. I think Joe Mixon shouldn't be where he is right now. He should be closer to that, like, low-end RB1. Not even. I honestly think that Joe Mixon's an RB2. I mean, that's just personally where I'm at. And I like guys like Kenyon Drake because, to me, they just present a higher potential ceiling.
Joe Mixon, according to what I'm looking at, is going, like, RB6. And Kenyon Drake is going, like, RB11, which is the difference between 111 and 212. Yeah. So it is one round, but that's a very significant round.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun to see. I mean, like, I'm not surprised if Joe Mixon sneaks into the first round of people's drafts. That's not gonna be surprising at all.
I think he'll go in the first round of a lot of Scott Fishbowl drafts. I do think it's a mistake.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Which I think most people probably aren't with us on that. So it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be fun. And that's what makes the Scott Fishbowl so fun, is there's going to be so many leagues, so many ways for this thing to shake out. And so it's just going to be a fun, you know, fun game. Like I said, you can't, like, predict this. You know what I mean? Like, we think that's going to happen, but in your league it might happen, in my league it won't. It's going to be like, I don't know, it's just going to be crazy. It just depends on the people you get paired with. That's really what it is. Like,
yeah, of course. I mean, that's what happens when there's this many leagues, is everybody's draft is going to flow a little bit differently, and it becomes very difficult to predict. But with any league, you can kind of get a feel for what the first round, two rounds, three rounds are going to kind of feel like, just based upon the fact that there's a lot more groupthink in those elite players. Once you get beyond that, though, I mean, that's when personal evaluations take over, and especially in a league like this where, you know, it's a bragging rights league. I mean, that's why people play the Scott Fish Bowl, is to brag about it. So, you know, people like getting their guys, so it very quickly turns into, you know, every draft is very different based upon people reaching for players that they particularly like.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not as much the case in those first couple rounds.
Yeah. It's definitely not. All right. Well, I mean, we're going to talk about draft approach. I mean, because that's a big part of this. And like we said, there's no one way to really nail the draft approach down because it's going to be so many different variations. But it's really, to me, like the best part of this whole thing. So let's get into the draft approach. Let's talk about early picks, middle picks of the draft, late picks. Adam, you have an early pick, right, on your league?
I do not, actually. I was just going to take the early picks for the discussion here.
Okay.
So we could spread it out a little bit. I am actually drafting 11th in the Hogs division.
All right.
So represent. Neil and I are actually drafting back-to-back, obviously, in different divisions. But Neil's drafting 12th. And Josh, I can't recall, where are you drafting? Because you'll be discussing the middle right now.
Yeah, I'm a 108.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, essentially, to kind of give us a little bit more variety, I'm just going to kind of talk about if I was drafting from the start, because that was what I was hoping would happen. I'm fine with drafting 11th. In fact, I love it, because to me, like, that's the truest form of the Scott Fishbowl. I know Scott was allowing people to pick their positions for where they wanted to draft this year, but I just think it's neat for me personally, not get what I had asked for, because that's what it's been every year prior to this. So, you know, that's what it should be. And honestly, I think drafting from 11th, just, you know, before I transition to talking about drafting from early, one of the neat things about drafting from the back part of the draft is you get to see what everyone else is doing in this new and different format, which to me can be an advantage.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know how you guys want to kick it off. I mean, obviously, if I'm talking about the early picks, I kind of already touched on it a little bit as far as what I would do at the very start of the draft. So for me, it's going to be very running back focused, but Lamar does sneak in there. So like if I was just talking about drafting from maybe like one of those first four spots, for me, Lamar is in there and Mahomes is nowhere near it. It's McCaffrey, it's Barkley. And honestly, it's Elliott or Kamara. That's probably going to be a toss-up. And Lamar is going to find his way in there. I don't know which I would emphasize more. I think just because of overall, like, that positional drop-off that Josh talked about being more resemblant of the running back drop-off for the quarterback position in this format, I think I might go with Lamar. In those top four spots. But outside of Lamar, like, then I totally transitioned to running back, and I think that's probably going to be how I view most of the first round. But Josh, how would you approach those middle rounds, say, if, you know, the likes of Lamar and some of those running backs are gone?
So I pretty much agree with what you said. I think that McCaffrey, Barkley, Elliott, Kamara is the top tier. And then in the middle rounds, if I can get any of that, of course I'm taking it. And I think Michael Thomas is really in the conversation. So I would be happy to take Michael Thomas where I'm at. And I'm more inclined to take what I see as a top one or two tight end than I am to take Lamar or Mahomes ahead of them. Because I just feel like the QB1 is not going to be that predictable. It's going to be somebody that pops up and has, you know, that kind of value that Lamar delivered last year. So I really want, like, Michael Thomas first, Kelce, Kittle, and then I'm looking at those two quarterbacks after that.
All right, all right, so Adam says he feels like four running backs, maybe Lamar, mixed in, like, let's say the top four picks. In your spot, like, fifth to eighth, maybe, Josh?
Yeah.
You feel like if any of those running backs fall, I'm taking them in the fifth spot or in that area. And then if not, you're more inclined, you're saying, to let the quarterbacks continue to drop?
Yeah, I would take Michael Thomas, Kelce, and Kittle ahead of Lamar.
Any quarterback, basically.
That hurts me a little bit, but Lamar and Mahomes.
Okay.
Just because of the position.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. All right, so basically, I mean, with me being in the last spot, right, let's just say the last four picks, and I am the 12th spot, and I did ask for it, specifically because I like for multiple reasons to be in the 12th spot. One, I like to watch the draft fall to me to see how things are going. You know, we mentioned how we think things are going to go and how, you know, what the data says and all these kind of things. But again, every league is different. You don't know who loves who in your division, in your league. So you don't know what's going to happen. So I like that 12th spot because it puts me in this position where I get to see what the other 11 people in front of me are thinking. And I get to kind of start to kind of formulate, you know, are they just picking this in the first round to be safe? Is there a run happening straight out the gate here? Like what's going on? Because when I'm in that 12th spot, I'm not necessarily locked in on any particular player. I just want to not be on the back end of any runs, and I kind of want to start a run. So, you know, if you're going to let quarterbacks fall to me in that range, I'm going to take one, you know, if none are taken. If you're going to let the top tight ends fall to me because someone panicked on quarterbacks and scared everyone else started going with them, I'm going to take tight ends. So, like, whatever's falling to me at this spot, I feel good with it. As long as I feel like I can get a top two, top three guy in that spot. Do you think it's crazy to think that in the 12th spot that you're going to get the top two or three at some position?
No. Okay. So essentially you're basically saying fade running back, more likely than not.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be rare that, you know, okay. So you're kind of taking, you know, kind of a counterintuitive approach of targeting the elite of any position.
Right. I need an elite player. And I know that in this league, there is going to be elite players at every position, right? And there's a few who are the cream of the crop. And I'm not going to get the top running backs. I'm not going to go crazy with that pick necessarily. I mean, I do have a pick right after that in the 12th spot, of course. So I could take a running back still in that area and be okay with it. But, I mean, at that point, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Are you taking Nick Chubb or something? Are you taking the Joe Mixon? No. I'm not going to go there, you know?
I would take Dalvin if he's there. Dalvin is kind of my worst-case 12th pick. And then ahead of Dalvin, I have Lamar, Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Dak Prescott.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even know if Dalvin's going to get there, honestly. Like, I don't feel like you will. I mean, The only thing is this holdout thing might scare somebody in your league, you know, and make them fall. But I don't think other than that or the injuries, you know, it's a legit concern. And no one wants to be in the Scott Fishbowl and get to the end and then Cook, you know, craps the bed for you. So it's a legit chance that Dalvin Cook of all these running backs falls, right? I mean, it's possible. But I'd rather not take that chance.
It's going to happen. Somebody's going to get him at like 204.
Right. But I mean, also there's guys like Aaron Jones, right, who were an outlier last year. So there's going to be another guy like Aaron Jones probably, right? You got your Austin Ecklers who we're going to see what he's going to do. So there's these guys who like – and then, I know the fear is the big drop-off, right, at running back. Like if you don't take one there, what happens? Like who do you get stuck with, right? But you guys know that in all past Scott Fishbowls, I've always gone this other route. Like I usually get the back end of the draft and I have no issue going tight end, quarterback, tight end, you know, wide receiver, tight end. I have no issue doing that. So my main goal, if I'm in the back end of the draft, is I need elite players. I want people I feel good about that I don't feel like are going to fail me because I took a risk on them. I don't want to take a gamble at the end of the round. And I just want high caliber players I'm super confident in. I don't want to talk about what Joe Mixon might do. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't want no mites. I don't want the ifs, the you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas. I want like, oh, this guy is Lamar Jackson or this guy is, you know, Michael Thomas. I want sure things. So even at the back end.
The end of the round is such a slam dunk for who Neil is as a person.
It's so like
exactly his personality.
I guess what I'm interested in, Neil. So, all right. So just hypothetically there, are Michael Thomas and like Travis Kelce the only wide receiver and tight ends that you would target? Or are you willing to go below the top elite of the elite at those two positions? Because obviously in most drafts, you're going to see multiple running backs and multiple quarterbacks go in the first round. But there will be drafts where you only see Michael Thomas or Travis Kelce or both, or probably there'll be one or two that have neither of them go in the first round.
Right. This is where you come into the situation of, you know, would you take Chris Godwin before, you know, those other guys like, you know, that are going to be there? I mean, if Dalvin Cook falls there, like he's consideration, of course. I'm not going to plan on that. You know what I mean? So if you're telling me like Nick Chubb or Chris Godwin, who knows? You know what I mean? Like I might not go Nick Chubb. Who knows? I mean, we'll just see how it plays out. I'm willing to consider anything. It just depends on what's happening in front of me. Do you know what I mean? So I've been in enough of these to know that there's no way for me to predict what's going to happen. I've seen every kind of run in front of me. You know what I mean? So We'll see. And the thing I like also is that I control. Like,
this is Ben Buddha football, fantasy football, guys.
And I like that I can also cause a run, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, so if quarterbacks do fall and I take like Lamar or Mahomes, go crazy, like everyone's going to start to freak out. Like, so I like that. I like having that thing where, okay, now I'm going to make everybody freak out, hopefully. And now some people are going to fall to me that I didn't expect to originally. You know what I mean? So it's just a lot of fun at the back of the end of the draft for me. So I have fun with it. I don't get too uptight about it. I'm going to try to get the best players early on and then let, you know, see how things fall out to me. But let's just say, for instance, I'm in the Eliminator League, right? Which I was trying to sort of draft like Scott Fishbowl. I was the 9th pick, I think, there. Yeah, 9th pick. I took Michael Thomas at that spot. And then my next pick was DeAndre Hopkins. So I'm willing to go. I went wide receiver. Like,
and that was like 17 picks later.
Yeah.
So you're talking like pick 34.
Yeah, and then my next pick was after that was Chris Godwin. So I just kept going. Like, it just kept happening. And then in the 4th round, I took Darren Waller. So I haven't got a running back. I was five rounds in.
Yeah, to a very deep draft, too, because, I mean, you're drafting 17 teams in those eliminated teams.
I actually, in the 5th round, got James Conner. I'm totally okay with James Conner in the 5th round and not taking Mixon.
That's the first pick I don't like.
But I'm okay with it, though. Like, in the 5th round, and I have no running backs, I'm okay with it.
Like, this was a masterpiece until you said the words James Conner.
You realize you got him at like picks like 80.
Yeah, like, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, it's crazy value. That being said, I mean, to kind of circle back to what you're saying, essentially you're saying that there's value. There can be value in going contrarian. And I mean, a lot of times I'd agree with you. I don't know how that's going to pan out in this format, but I think that what you did say that I think is something that goes overlooked in every fantasy league, regardless of format, is like drafting those players that you just feel confident in. Like, no wishy-washy first round, second round picks. They're just, it's not worth it to you. And oftentimes they don't pan out. So the more confident you can feel in a pick, like, that's huge, especially in those back end of the first round, beginning of the second round picks, because there can be a lot of times a ton of value in just drafting someone who's super consistent.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to be confident in my pick, you know, no matter where I'm picking at. And at the back of the 12th, if that means I'm taking a tight end or a wide receiver because they're the best ones and they're elite, I'm not going to take the 7th best running back, 8th best running back. I'm just not going to do it. So, yeah, that's how I feel. I think we spent a lot of time on that. So hopefully we kind of, you know, create a picture.
I feel like
there.
This can be generalized into like every kind of advice, like dating advice. Don't take the one that you're not sure about. You know, just let it come to you.
Right. Let the elite come to you, man. Let the 10, let the dime drop. She'll come. There'll be one that will fall through the cracks, man. They always do. Let's move on to the next draft approach question we have here. What is your top priority for you in round one? I guess we kind of discussed that, right? I mean, we could focus more on our actual pick. I just kind of did that myself, so I don't really want to get further into it. But do either one of you want to go any further into your top priority in your actual draft position?
No, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in a way when you kind of talked about the fact that, like, these drafts are so different that it's so tough to kind of go through it round by round because we really don't know what's going to be available. I mean, if we wanted to kind of talk about our general approach or how, you know, the scoring's going to impact what we value, I think we've kind of already done that a little bit with Neil emphasizing, like, he's comfortable with going contrarian as long as he's focusing on players that he feels extremely confident in their consistency. And I emphasize the fact that, like, based on the scoring, I think that running back is really going to be extremely valuable and that, you know, having one of those top running backs to me is going to be really a core foundational play. So do we have anything that we really want to expand upon as far as the other rounds go? I mean, really, I don't know other than like talking about when do we want to approach potentially drafting quarterback. That's really the only other topic that I think we could really tackle that would be applicable to all the leagues, because it's so hard with this because every league is so different.
My only thing in the first round is I'm just curious how many people, if it just went running back, let's just get crazy and say that, you know, you're 8 picks in and nobody picked anything else than running backs. Like, you really picking Joe Mixon, Josh, or would you go a different route at number 8?
No way. Okay. No, I would go Michael Thomas at that point. I would go Michael Thomas, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so you're not married to running back unless one of the top ones fall, basically.
Yeah, okay. Like Dalvin Cook is my running back 5, and I have him at 112. And that lines up with the history of this scoring. So, like, he's my RB5. I'm taking him at 112. I'm actually a little bit hot on that. Like, I'm taking him ahead of where the running back 5 usually finishes. And I
– would you take Dalvin Cook before Kelce and all those guys?
I would take Kelce ahead of him.
Okay.
Kelce and 4 running backs – or 4 quarterbacks. Gotcha. I'm sorry.
All right. That's interesting. So there's a chance. I mean, we'll see how this Cook news shakes out and, you know, when that time comes. But, you know, he may be the steal of people's drafts. Like,
he really could be. Know,
there's a real chance of that, depending on how it plays out. I would definitely rather have Cook over Mixon. I'll just say that. So however that plays out, you know, that's where I'm at. But as far as, like, top priority for first round, I think we kind of covered that, you know, and just in general in that first thing. We talked a lot in that first subject here. How about round 2? Anything you guys have that, you know, you're hoping that it plays out a certain way for you, or you're hoping a certain player falls to round 2? Like, do you have your eyes set on a specific guy? I mean, is there any, have you guys thought far enough into that? Like, see, again, that's for me. I'm pick 12. So, like, it's next pick, right? So, like, I'm just going to get the guys I want there, and it's not going to really be a big deal. But, you know, you guys pick a little later into the second rounds. Do you, you know, have a certain guy you want to see fall there, or is it just kind of, again, let this thing come to me?
Actually, real quick, Neil, like, since we're kind of snaking back around, I do have one question for you as far as picking on the turn, especially in a format like this. Are you ever opposed to going 2 players at the same position there?
Hell no.
Because of this type of format? Hell like, no. Are you comfortable with going 2 quarterbacks or 2 tight ends, like you said, to create a run? Or do you think that pigeonholes you too much?
No, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with, number 1, making people go, what the fuck? Like, what do I do now? Like, is this going to be a thing? And I, like, I always feel like there's going to be something of value for me. Like, I'm not going to be totally screwed no matter what I do. So, like, somewhere along the line, there's going to be some sort of run, or there's going to be players that I didn't expect to go as high that went higher than I like them at. So, like, I always feel comfortable with, you know, I know what's there if I do that. You know what I mean? So I'm fine going tight end. I've done it before, and it played out fine. The only time it really burns you is if one gets hurt. You know what I mean? So if it comes to, like, injury-prone guys, like, guys that I am concerned about, I know people, like, hate the word injury-prone, but, like, if there's guys that I feel not confident about injury-wise, and I wouldn't do it, but that shouldn't really happen in the first. You know, it's not really a concern, but later I wouldn't typically go back-to-back at the same position if it's guys that I'm concerned about health-wise or anything like that. But for the most part, I have no issue, you know, doubling up on anything in the first. I just wouldn't do it with running backs because I know everyone gets in love with them and they matter so much. But at that point, I feel like the value is lost, you know, at the end of the first round. So I would not go running back.
That makes a lot of sense. So, Josh, with how you're kind of open to, you know, almost similar to what Neil said, like, approaching that top player at a position in those middle rounds, what are you kind of hoping ends up for you there in that second round?
I'm hoping for one of those top 4 QBs. That seems like the most likely scenario.
You really think that they're going to fall that far?
See, I don't think they will.
Well, I don't think so at all, man. I think you might be lucky to get, like, Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray in that range, but I don't know about those top 4 falling outside of the first round, let alone past the turn and like, into that, okay, that middle range. So I mean, it's possible. Like you said, like, that's best case scenario. If one of those hit you in the face, like, it's great. And these drafts are going to be so different. That will happen. There will be a league where someone gets Dak Prescott in the middle of the second round. That's definitely going to happen. But
I would also be happy to take Joe Mixon or Derrick Henry. Or if Kittle falls to me, I would be happy to go there.
That's so interesting because you just named 2 players that it's like, Derrick Henry is someone who I would consider in the first round. Joe Mixon is someone who I don't know if I'd draft in the second round. Like, I am so – they're so polar opposites for me, especially in this format.
And also what you mentioned, Adam, about you know, the chances of a certain guy falling to you, even though it's not expected. Like, that's another big thing with Scott Fishbowl, which, you know, you kind of hate it in a way. Like, when it gets towards the end and these teams start to, like, you know, come to the playoffs and stuff, like, there's going to be people who got steals in their draft and they automatically had an advantage because of that. You know what I mean? So, and it's bound to happen. It happens every year. Like, you just can't believe a guy got a certain player in the second round, or, you know, or the guy at the turn gets, like, these amazing, two amazing players. And you're like, how did they let these two fall to this guy? Like, and that's bound to happen. And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, you're going to, like, you can't ignore these other leagues' drafts because you're like, I'm going to see this guy if I get to the end. You know what I mean? So, like, it does frustrate you a little bit when you see surprises fall like that, because you're like, there's no way this guy should have got this guy, and now he's going to be in the playoffs potentially, and I'm going to have to deal with it. So, it is something that's, you know, you think about that you don't normally think about in other leagues, but it'll be interesting, man. It'll be interesting. We'll see how it goes. All right. So then I guess, you know, do you want to move to round two then? I mean, round three? You guys have
I mean, I'll kind of take, like, at the end of the second, going into the third round, I feel like more often than not, if your core position is going to be running back, again, there's going to be the occasional Lamar Jackson in there. And I think with those, it kind of opens up yourself a little bit more. But I honestly think that I'm probably going to be pounding running back. As crazy as it sounds, I think there could be a lot of value in going, like, RBX3 or taking two running backs and a quarterback. The toughest decision, I think, here for anybody drafting in, like, those early picks is going to be whether or not to pass on quarterback, because you don't really know what's going to end up coming back to you in the fourth round. You don't know about those quarterback runs. It's so hard on the ends to be able to judge whether or not a run is going to happen. And like Josh was saying before, there's a bit more steep of a drop off at the quarterback position. So I think that, you know, if in that back half of the first, I'm able to get a quarterback like, you know, Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson fall, that's phenomenal. But I think the ones that I'm probably going to be looking to draft there, if they're there, are going to be like a Drew Brees. I think he's probably, I mean, honestly, he might be the only quarterback that I'm really looking at there. And then outside of that, I'm probably going to be targeting a lot of running backs in that range.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Again, you know, I'm going to keep the same narrative for me as far as I'm letting things fall to me. I'm not going to get, you know, dedicated to a position or have my eyes set on a certain player or position. I do want to ask a question that we don't have on here that I think is interesting. Are either of you willing, or do you have your mind set on letting a certain position fall? Like, are you okay with going, hey, I'm not going to draft a quarterback for like ever?
If my league is drafting quarterbacks particularly slowly, I will let them fall. But that's the only position. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to pick up three of what I think are top five tight ends.
Yeah, because people love to say, like, oh, you know, the quarterbacks are going to go slower than you think after the certain guys. But that's never holds true. Like, in Superflex, those suckers fly, man. Like, guys that you don't even feel should be drafted as high as they are just going because it's Superflex. And, like, nobody wants to get stuck with, you know, a bad quarterback or two bad quarterbacks or sometimes not three quarterbacks. So, like, every time I want to believe that quarterbacks won't continue to fall, I mean, fly off the board, they do. Like, no matter what, like, I'm never a guy that likes to pay a lot for quarterbacks. So when they don't fall, it, like, kind of drives me nuts. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I don't want to force my hand into a quarterback right now. But at some point in a super flex, like, if you don't draft a quarterback, I mean, let's just, if we're looking at quarterbacks that, you know, in this scoring from last year, like, once you get to, like, Jared Goff, he scored like 227 points in this scoring. So, like, I mean, how valuable is he really? I mean, at that point, like, you're talking about, like, running backs wise, like, he's matched up with, like, David Montgomery, like, 23 running backs in, you know what I mean? So, you know, and it gets worse from there. So it just really depends, man. Like, there's no reason to reach for Bakers and, you know, all these guys who just, you know, are they really going to move the needle enough just because it's super flex for you to reach for it? You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where I do tend to let quarterbacks fall because I want to believe that people aren't going to go crazy over them, but then they always tend to do it. So we'll see, man. But that is the one position that I do tend to let fall. I let running backs fall in the past, and it did burn me. So I can only go so far on running backs. Because last year I went like wide receiver all the way, and running backs definitely hurt me later.
Yeah, I think that I'm like personal draft position, not what we were talking about, where I was, you know, kind of playing the role of the beginning of the draft. But in my actual league, I'm picking 11th, and that's kind of the range that, you know, I like the idea of one of these top four quarterbacks, if they fall, taking them there, because I think that there's going to be value in having an elite quarterback. But outside of the elite of the position, I think that I'm not really going to make it a priority to draft, you know, a guy who I think is going to be the QB6.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that it's really going to be worthwhile. I think that I'm better off taking players that I think present more upside. I think outside of, you know, getting lucky in the first round and having some elite quarterback kind of fall on my lap, I'm probably going to be fading the position and seeing how long I can, you know, it's a game of chicken. Yeah. You know, when you're waiting on quarterbacks, especially in these leagues, especially drafting at the ends, it becomes a real game of chicken. But yeah. Sometimes you got to play it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there's not value in reaching.
No. Yeah. You got to take the temperature in the room, man. You got to like, is this the round? Is this the round I got to do this? You got to see what it is. But yeah, I tend to let the quarterbacks fall. I just, like I said, if I don't go quarterback at that back end of that round, that first round, it's probably going to be, you know, quarterbacks late. It's just probably what it is. Is that all we have for Scott Fishbowl? Is there anything else that we really want to point out? I mean, like I said, we're going to revisit this a ton. We're going to revisit Scott Fishbowl a ton. We'll have guests on specifically about it. We'll talk more about it as things get closer and we start narrowing these things down more and more. But is there anything initially that we want to put out there into the universe on Scott Fishbowl right now?
Listen, it's really all about like just meeting a couple new people that you actually want to interact with and expanding your horizons a little bit. I feel like that's what it's really about, because we're all going to lose except for like, hey, so you might as well focus on something else.
Yeah. I had a down year last year, but I've done well in the past. So I hope to rebound this year. So I have to recalculate.
Yo, what did you finish last year?
Last year wasn't good. I don't think. I think I wanted to forget. Bro. About it. I wanted to forget.
I'm going to ass after you call your not good year better than half of my years.
Well, that's not the benchmark here, Josh. It's not the benchmark. So yeah, I mean, like I said, we'll get more into these guys. We'll get more into this league just in general. But for anyone who is participating, we look forward to competing against you if you're in our leagues. Like I said, it's a lot of fun to get to know people. Definitely donate. Even if you aren't a part of the Scott Fishbowl and you're just super happy and nice and you want to help people, donate. Like, that's there for you. Or join Eliminator Leagues if there are any are still open. I don't know if they are. But definitely just get involved in somehow. Use the hashtag. Talk about it. It's fun. You know, we'll continue these episodes. If you guys have Scott Fishbowl oriented questions, or if there's certain guests you want to hear talk about it, you know, just let us know and we'll accommodate those things as best as possible. I do want to move on to foul or no foul before we close this episode out. Of course, you guys know, longtime listeners, foul or no foul, I'm going to throw statements out. We're going to say whether we agree or disagree with them. If we disagree with them, there's a foul. If we don't agree, if we do agree with it, it's no foul. So the first one I have for you here, guys, is Lamar Jackson says this happened, but his head coach says it didn't. The Ravens took the Titans lightly last season in the playoffs. Foul or no foul? What do you guys think?
I think it's a foul.
Foul?
I think that he wants to place the blame elsewhere, and the coaches are probably professionals who showed up to work, probably did their best. I don't think they were like taking the week off. I mean, I appreciate the intensity from a competitor, but I think he should chill.
Yeah, I agree. It's a foul. It's just like the idea that it was a emotional response and they just like got cocky and didn't train. It's like, it's literally the AFC Championship. Like, I just had a brain fart. Was it the AFC Championship?
But I mean, no one's taking anyone lightly at that point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just ridiculous to say. obviously he's probably emotional about it still. And, you know, he doesn't want to believe that they just got outclassed or whatever the case may be, got out coached that game, whatever it was. But they weren't going into it like, ah, it's just the Titans, guys. Don't worry. Let's just get out there and do what we do. Like, that's not what happened. But yeah, that was an interesting thing happening. I asked about Cap last week, so I want to ask about Josh Gordon this week. He applied for reinstatement, and this time, he will not be banned again. Foul or no foul?
I think he's going to play like 4 or 5 games.
Damn you, Josh. Can't miss out for another Josh, man.
Hey, like maybe we should just be cool with Josh Gordon's going to play 4 or 5 games. And that's just what he does.
I don't know. Yeah. What's that?
I was going to say, I'm going to go no foul, but I think that even if he gets reinstated, like he might not make a roster, bud.
Yeah.
Like he's just, yeah, I just don't know anymore. He's such like, he has such a history that it's so much baggage for a team to bring him in. I mean, unless the Patriots are going to do it again, and God knows what the Patriots are doing even. I don't know. I don't see it.
All right. Not a lot of Josh support at this point. I do feel bad because I think he said like his brother died or something, and that like caused him to like relapse.
Man.
It sucks. Well, then
maybe he should take a year off.
I don't know, man.
Like,
or maybe the NFL should just like stop caring about it and just let him play.
It's kind of sick. I think it's hard to take a year off. He's getting older, man. Yeah. He doesn't have a lot of years.
It's one of those. It's literally similar to the Kaepernick situation. Like, you can only put so many years in the garbage, you know, before it's like, you know, can I really do this at a high level anymore at this point? Yeah. Like,
I don't know what's best for Josh Gordon, but if what's best for Josh Gordon is playing 3 games and then doing something else, then fine.
Yeah. We'll see how it plays out, but hopefully it ends well. The next one, now that Dak signed his franchise tender, has a bucket full of money, an offense filled with weapons, he will finish this fantasy season as a top 3 quarterback. Foul or no foul?
No foul. Yeah, I think that Dak right now is, I mean, he should be in just about everybody's top 3. I mean, for me, he is the QB3 right now behind Lamar and behind Mahomes. I think he probably presents the most likely chance of any other quarterback outside of Mahomes and Lamar to finish in the top 3. So it's definitely a high ceiling. You know, it's hard for any quarterback to finish top 3. But I think Dak has shown us that, you know, he's capable. And I think he's already taken that next step. It's just a matter of, you know, if you're going to be on board with it, staying consistent.
Yeah. Josh, you agree?
Yeah, Dak Prescott's good at football, and the Cowboys might have the best wide receivers in the NFL. Yeah. So why not?
It's going to be fun. The last one I have for you here, New England Patriots quarterback Jarrett Stidham will keep his job for the entire season and do well. Foul or no foul?
Foul. I don't know what they're doing, but it ain't that.
I'm rooting for the guy, man. I really think like there's a chance he could be okay. Like, I don't know why. Maybe I'm just optimistic. Maybe I just don't see the Patriots do a lot of bad things very often. But I just feel like, I mean, all right, even more so than this. What percentage do you put on it that he's the starter week one?
Oh, week one is like probably a 70% bet.
What's the percentage right now that there is a week one?
Whenever week one is, whatever it is, do you feel like what's the percentage you put on Jarrett Stidham actually starting and not Brian Hoyer, the veteran who, you know, knows the system and all this kind of stuff, or some outside vet that nobody expected? Like, who do you put there?
I think it's less than 50. I mean, it might be like 40, but I'd probably say like 33 1/3. I think that there's a 1/3 chance that he starts, a 1/3 chance that Brian Hoyer starts, and a 1/3 chance that Cam Newton starts or some other random free agent.
Damn.
Because Cam's still out there. Like, there's no way that the Patriots aren't getting Cam, right?
I don't know, man.
That's just how this works.
That's how it's supposed to work.
You know.
What if they decided that their mission is tanking?
I mean, if it is, then sure. Like,
but is it with that defense? How can you tank with that defense? Like,
it's going to be pretty tough. There's some bad teams out there. There's some legitimately bad teams that are poorly coached. I think it'll be very difficult for them to be the worst team in the NFL. Yeah, as crazy as that sounds.
If the defense is truly that good, then Jared Stidham is about to be Trent Dilfer.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, one part of me says, yeah, he's going to be Trent Dilfer. Another part says, how could they not sign Cam? Like, if that defense is that good, you know what I mean?
The problem is, if they don't sign a quarterback, they don't have an offense because they don't have a rushing game. Like, they don't right now. Sony Michel is not the answer. And they're not going to run James White Damian Harris maybe is the answer. But, like, really, I don't think – I don't know. Yeah, you can fall down the Patriots rabbit hole and you'll never get out.
If you're drafting in Scott Fishbowl today, are you more likely to draft Jarrett Stidham or Cam Newton?
Cam
Newton.
All right.
For sure.
All right.
Do you want Mason Rudolph or Cam Newton?
that's not fair. That's different. That's a different story, sir. Don't try.
Right, sure it is. Where was Jarrett Stidham drafted? I don't know, but it wasn't top 15.
Where was Tom Brady drafted?
Okay. Let's yeah. not go there. Like him and Russell Wilson, and that's it.
All right. Let's move on. Let's close this thing out. Let's do show and tell. Hopefully you guys brought something to the party here. Any product, podcast, music, book, philosophy, advice, anything you want to share. I'm going to go pretty basic with this one today. I actually ordered something off Amazon that I thought was pretty cool. I don't wash my shoes very much, but when I do, they usually get fucked up. So I said, there's got to be a better solution to this. And so I bought something off Amazon, this little bag type package thing that you put your shoes in and then in the washer, and it worked like a gem. And so while I'm probably late to this party, I feel like that is a very usable product that you guys need to get on board with if you haven't already used it. Normally I just buy new shoes, but I was like, fuck it, I don't want to buy new shoes right now. I want these shoes to just not be dirty and not smell or whatever the case was. And so I did that and it worked. I don't have the name of it. I'm sure if you just type magical shoe washer thing on Amazon, you'll find it. If somebody pays me, I'll find the name. But until then, just Google like shoe bag or something on Amazon and you'll find plenty of different ones. But it actually was cool, man. The shoes didn't come out oddly shaped. The laces weren't all screwed up. And like, it was just great. It was just made everything perfect and easy. So I highly recommend you to get one of those if you're not trying to buy new shoes right now. Maybe you're hiding from COVID. Maybe you just have some shoes you love, you know, like I did. And so, yeah, I highly recommend this bag to wash your shoes with. That's all I got. Josh, Adam, who wants to go first?
We went to a place tonight and I've never had this before, but we had a sangria and margarita swirl. This is very good.
We cannot trust any of Josh's takes from today's episode, so you can go ahead and throw those out the window. Only listen to Adam and my advice today.
That's probably not high class enough for anyone who lives outside of the state of Oklahoma, but for those of us out here in the hills, it works pretty good.
Man, I don't know if you got anything that can top that, Adam. Can you top a swirl map?
No, I'm not even going to try. The only thing that I have is something that's pretty nerdy. But if you're really into MMA, I found a YouTube channel that does breakdowns of different knockouts. And I really love the way in which this person breaks it down. So shout out to MMA Sportsmaster on YouTube. He doesn't even have a ton of views or anything, but I just started watching him stuff recently. And to me, it was a really concise breakdown of specifically Sugar Sean O'Malley, his last two knockouts. And I just thought it was really interesting. And it was one of the only places that I could even find the full video content on YouTube. So I just thought it was really neat. And I wanted to give a guy a shout out who, right now has 30,000 views on his most viewed video. So
there's some wizards on YouTube, man. There's some really good people on there, some talented people. And Sugar Sean, man, you think superstar potential, Adam?
Oh, I mean, yeah,
I think definitely. So too, man.
I mean, it's so. Just the way that he approaches striking alone is, it's reminiscent of when Conor McGregor came in.
He's a character. He's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good stuff.
I mean, I don't think you can have people like Conor McGregor anymore just because of the formula of the UFC now. That being said, I mean, he's going to be a star.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man. That's all we have. We gave you guys our Scott Fishbowl advice. We gave you our show and tell. We hit up foul or no foul. Josh is drunk. Again, I must mention that. He's, I don't know. Josh, if you blew right now, would you be sober?
What? I'm sorry. I don't understand the question. Yeah.
Let's throw his advice out the window, Adam, okay? If I could cut him out of the show, I would. Josh, we need you sober next episode. No, kidding. All right, Josh, besides at your local Applebee's with margaritas, where can they find you on Twitter?
He nailed it. It was totally an Applebee's.
It's totally an Applebee's. Anyway, Chili's,
maybe back ribs, barbecue sauce.
It was Fridays, Chili's, or Applebee's, no question.
It was this place called San Marcos, and they have little places all over Oklahoma City, but this was like the original, and I've only ever had this at that place.
Where can they find you on the internet, though, Josh?
On the internet,
when you're not at your local, when you're sometimes not at the local watering hole.
Well, you can find me at Player Profiler. I write there sometimes, and my Twitter handle is at JC Crocker.
He got through it. He didn't stutter or anything. I got to give you some props. That was like your, you know, DUI test. Adam, where can they find you at?
Yeah, everybody can find me at the other FF guy on Twitter.
Dropping straight knowledge on there. Straight flames. These guys are both dropping fire. Go follow them. Follow us on Twitter. If you have any questions, suggestions, feedback, I love feedback, man. I love when people hit us with feedback. It's a lot of fun. So positive, negative, what you want to hear more of, less of, anything. Just hit us up on Twitter. Hit up any of us. We're here to talk to you guys. We'll answer it. We'll put it in the show. All that good stuff. If you haven't already, slap subscribe. Drop us a 5-star review. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to get. Again, it's really, other than you sharing it by hitting retweet or whatever on it, social media, like, it's really the only way people find out about the show. Like, the 5-star reviews bump you up on the charts. It helps people who are just, you know, going through things to see how are people receiving this show. And so when you give a 5-star review right now, your 5-star review will be at the top of the reviews. So people will know, like, what you think of the show. Leave us a 5-star review. Follow the show. Subscribe to it. Follow us on Twitter. All that good stuff. We love you guys. As always, be kind. Be great. Keep dying.